eventually reached out to someone that I actually talked about out loud when I'm going through. I just felt like I was burdening other people when I talked about myself. I'm always happy to listen to other people. Like, I love talking about their mental health and what they're going through and love listening to other people. But in a way, I hate talking about myself in that sort of way.
It's harder to talk about yourself.
Yeah, yeah, it's especially when it's to do with mental health. It makes, I don't know if it makes me feel embarrassed or it puts me in a lower light than other people, but I know now that it doesn't, which is good.
That's Toby Whittle. He's an easygoing, mild-mannered dude, but throughout his life, he's also really suffered with anxiety. Toby's brother's also gone through his own struggles with mental health, and that hit Toby hard too. He's learned a lot over the years about how to manage himself and be there for others. Now he's an ambassador for the Shaka Project, pushing the messages that have helped him get through.
Welcome to Young Blood, the award-winning volunteer podcast dedicated to young men's mental health. My name's Callum McPherson, I'm a journalist, and this is a platform for everyday men to share lived experience stories and show that no matter what you're going through, you're not alone. Suicide is the number one killer of young people, and changing that starts with speaking up. So let's do it.
The Young Blood Men's Mental Health Podcast is a volunteer community service, and we rely on community support to bring this show to you. This episode is sponsored by Ski for Life, a charity committed to promoting well-being and suicide prevention. They've been running their annual ski relay on South Australia's Murray River for more than a decade, raising money to support community mental health initiatives. You can find out more about their cause at skiforlife.com.au.
Toby, what was it like growing up in Ballarat?
Yeah, it was great. I think living in a country town like that's definitely made me who I am today. I wouldn't change it for the world. I've met some people like throughout school, my childhood, who I'll be friends with forever. And being able to grow up in a town like Ballarat was, yeah, definitely a great experience for me and taught me what I know today. And then, yeah, moving to the big city now is a bit of a change a few years
bloody
ago.
Bloody cold though.
Hey?
It's bloody cold.
Oh, mate, it's, yeah, they call it the coldest place on earth, mate.
Would you attest to that? Is it?
Oh, mate, yeah, 100%. 100%. Like, I've never worn so many layers in my life going outside watching footy in Ballarat.
Yeah.
Whereas two t-shirts, a jumper and a jacket, and you're still cold. So,
yeah, I remember going there for basketball as a kid, and I still remember. That's what I remember most.
Yeah.
Like, it was good fun, and it was fucking cold. Yeah.
You hear all the AFL teams that go there, they're like, nah, it's not to play there, man. It's windy, it's cold, it's wet. It's
seriously.
But probably it's good.
And so you grew up in a pretty big family.
Yeah.
And what kind of kid were you?
Definitely as I was younger, I was a bit more introverted. I felt like I was a lot more shy and not as outgoing as some other, like, as a lot of my friends used to, like, classify myself as a sheep a little bit, sort of followed other people and just did what they did and didn't really do things for myself a lot until I probably got to my later teenage years where I started to sort of figure myself out a little bit. But yeah, as a kid, definitely a lot more shy and just a lot more worried about the world than I wish I was. I wish I wasn't, in a way.
What do you remember sort of first being worried about?
It's funny, actually. I was a terrible sleeper as a child, especially like late primary school. It's really weird to say now, but I used to hate going to sleep because I thought that no one else was awake with me. I thought I was the only person in the world and no one could save me and that sort of thing. Like, every night as a kid, I'd never be able to get any sleep, which is really weird to think about now. And that's sort of when I started feeling like the way I did growing up through my childhood and in my young adult years as well. Yeah, like feeling like I'm alone in a way. Yeah, that's when I sort of started experiencing that sort of feeling, yeah.
So what other situations would make you feel anxious?
Like growing up through, as I went through high school, it's really, really funny, like again, talking about it now, a big thing for me was death. So like
fear of death?
Yeah, yeah. Anything that could make that happen, and especially things out of my control, which is, I think, is a big thing for people who do go through a lot of anxiety, is dealing with things that you can't control. So I remember as a kid, like, I'd see a fake news article of the world ending and I'd be like, I'd panic, man. Like, I'd have full panic attacks. I'd be like, why the hell is this happening? That sort of thing. And in a way, it's hard to deal with that sort of thing when you know you can't do anything about it. And I let that simmer for a long time. I was only young. I didn't really realize what I could do to help myself. Growing up, letting it fester probably did impact, like, a few years ago when it, like, eventually sort of broke down for me.
So on a daily basis, did you feel it really impact your your life and your relationships and that sort of thing?
Yeah, I feel like it did. Personally, I think relationships sort of helped me with other people. It was more when I was alone. I'd let things fester too much, and I felt like being with other people was a way to distract me, which was really good. At that time, it was when I was sort of in my own thoughts, and by myself is when I thought it impacted me the most.
So was it like you were worrying about imagined futures of all the things that could possibly happen, more so than stuff that was actually happening?
And that's a perfect way to put it. And I'm not going to lie, I'm still like that today as well. I haven't shaked that completely, and worrying about the futures like back then was all I thought about. I never thought about being in the present, never thought about being in the moment of where
What sort of other things do you remember worrying about, like when you were having those repetitive thoughts going through your mind?
I was also a big hypochondriac. That got me a lot.
Can you just explain what that is?
Yeah. So like worrying about any sort of sickness. So I could have like, I don't know, a little feeling in my leg, and I thought I was going to have to get my leg chopped off. Like it's little weird things like
and
that.
And you'd be on Google.
Yeah, WebMD, that sort of thing. Like searching up like, oh, damn, man. Like, yeah. And actually, there was one moment I actually got stung by a bee one day on the head. And I remember like as a response, all my like lymph nodes and that. It's like your immune system like flaring up, and I thought I had like cancer and I was going to die. Like that's sort of what I was going through, and I would stress every single day. I'd be on Google every day. I'd be that sort of thing, and I wouldn't be telling anyone about it either. Like I was embarrassed to talk about that sort of thing. A weird thing to think about now, but yeah.
How would it come out in your behavior, especially sort of in high school and as you got a bit older, like the fact that you were having these anxious thoughts all the time? How did that sort of impact the way that you were?
Yeah, definitely wasn't as outgoing and as positive as I could have been. I always had that little, I don't know, like feeling in the back of my head, like, okay, enjoy this now, but it could all end, like that sort of thing. Even though I wasn't, I was fine, but.
Were you a negative person?
No, I always see myself as a positive person when I can be, especially around other people. To myself, I'm very, like, not very negative, but do am quite hard on myself. Around other people, I try to be as positive as I can. I feel like I can rub people that way, which is really good.
But you're like naturally sort of paranoid.
Yeah, especially like things about myself and then towards my own behaviors and my own actions, like to do with me, I am quite harsh on myself. So, yeah.
So how did that make you feel about yourself from a relatively young age, knowing that you had all this going on in your head all the time and couldn't really get away from it, and it probably didn't seem like other people quite had that going on?
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, that's a great way to put it. Like I didn't have that knowledge that other people probably were going through this, like some other things as well, like that feeling of anxiety and depression. And I only really realised that as I got into my young adult years, other people do go through things as well. And especially as kids, like things can go wrong for people as well. I did feel like...
Oh, were you harsh on yourself?
Yeah. Yeah, that's probably the best way to put it. I'd always set myself very high standards, and if I didn't meet them, I'd feel, pretty let down and like feeling like I'm not achieving the best thing I can. Always pushing for a bit more than I could have done.
And did you get frustrated with yourself that you had all this going on all the time and you couldn't really get away from it? Because I think like those having those repetitive thoughts and that constant dialogue in our head, that can become negative self-talk, and we can easily think that there's something wrong with us, because why can't we just focus on the present moment, or why are we worrying about something that hasn't actually happened yet? But just because you don't want to think that way doesn't mean that you automatically can stop it. So did you experience sort of being pissed off at yourself for even being the way that you were?
Yeah, 100%. Like it took me a while to get help for it, and I knew I was actually angry at myself that I didn't earlier, and that's one thing that I'm very blessed that I did. But yeah, it's more feeling like I was in a rat race as a kid, which was weird to feel like.
But taking it real seriously.
Yeah, it's taking life too seriously, and like everything was a competition. Everything was, I had to be better than everyone else.
And no, you weren't good enough.
Yeah. Yeah. In a way.
Do you have any idea where this sort of inclination came from? Like why you thought that way? Or
no, I actually don't. I think about that all the time now, actually. Like I don't really know where that did come from, whether it was an experience or anything like genetic. I'm actually unsure, but.
Were you similar to your siblings in that way?
Like, then I actually wouldn't have known because I didn't talk to anyone about it. I didn't know how they felt. I'm the oldest of, I got three younger siblings as well. That was probably around the time when my two young brothers were roughly the same age as me, like 2 years and 5 years younger. So yeah, I was actually a little unsure what they were going through at the time because I was too focused at being angry at myself to notice what other people
were doing. Did you share this with anyone at all?
No, I didn't share.
For how long?
Too long. I probably wouldn't say until maybe till I moved to Adelaide when I eventually reached out to someone that I actually talked about out loud what I'm going through. I just felt like I was burdening other people when I talked about myself. I'm always happy to listen to other people. Like, I love talking about their mental health and what they're going through and love listening to other people. But in a way, I hate talking about myself in that sort of way.
It's harder to talk about yourself.
Yeah, it's especially when it's to do with mental health. It makes me feel embarrassed or it puts me in a lower light than other people, but I know now that it doesn't, which is good. But yeah, it is hard to even just out loud talk about it. It's very hard. So
how old are you now?
22, about to turn 23 in about a month's time. So
okay. So it wasn't until you were about 18 that you first said to someone that you've got all this going on and you're sort of ashamed about it.
Yeah.
To that point. Who did you speak to first?
So I went to Headspace in Adelaide.
Okay, so you went straight to a service.
Yeah, which was really helpful. So I did that when I first moved to Adelaide in 2020, going through COVID and sort of being locked up a bit. It wasn't good for me at all.
So did you feel like you could have talked to mates or a partner or your family, but you didn't want to come across that way to them?
To them, yeah. Especially like during those times, I just didn't want to burden other people, but there definitely were people I could have talked to. Like,
so you were thinking, other people have enough going on, so
I don't want to burden them with my problems. And
which is such a classic response.
Yeah,
that is what so many men think. But then once you go and actually get some help and learn some more things and understand yourself a bit better, and often for those of us who are lucky enough, we do bring it up with those people and they usually sort of give you a slap on the back of the head and say, why wouldn't you come and talk to me about
exactly
that earlier?
Right.
But before you're ready for that that phase, you do have that fear that, one, they might not respond the way I want them to, or two, and perhaps even more so, I don't want to be a burden on them when they've got all this other stuff going on.
But
that's really just something, a story we tell ourselves. So.
Yeah, over and over. And like you said, there's definitely like so many people we can reach out to than anyone can reach out to. Like, it could be anyone. I'm really close to my parents. They were some people. There's always services out there and there's always mates out there who are willing to listen, but you don't know that until you break that barrier.
So what actually got you over the hump to go and speak to Headspace?
So in 2020, I began to get really bad anxiety. It was like I'd have daily panic attacks. I'd sort of like lock myself in a room, shut the blinds, and just like I'd just hyperventilate. Like I couldn't. I'd have one thought about, back then it was that reoccurring thought of, they actually brought up like the fear of death again, that really came back to me. And
did COVID really affect that?
Yeah. I'd say not even the disease itself, it was more just being isolated from other people. So just being alone.
Because you'd moved to Adelaide and you didn't have your family around.
Didn't have my family. And I was at uni for about a month till it all got shut down. Had a few mates, obviously, but they were very new to me after just moving here. So did sort of feel alone a little bit. And it got to a point where I was just every day just, having these panic attacks and thoughts of like, what's this really even all for? Like, we're all going to die one day. And I just don't really want to be here and experience it. So I thought at that point, like, I've just got to go. I've got to do something.
Take us through what those panic attacks were like.
Yeah. So like I'd see something on my phone that sort of triggered me, whether that was, like I said, that hypochondriac feeling or a feeling where something could impact me that was out of my control. And I just started to feel my heart racing a little bit. And the only way I knew how to deal with it then was to just go into full shock. Actually never said that out loud. I'd just go in my room. It was actually like a spare room and I'd just shut the blinds and sit myself in a corner and just sit there and it'd start just, it was a weird feeling. Like I'd breathe really heavily and really quick to the point where my brain started feeling dizzy and I'd, be close to just like passing out. I was just
scared. Did you know what was happening?
No, that's sort of why I couldn't control it. either. It just sort of started happening, and the feeling of it happening just wasn't nice. And I'd have probably five or six of them, and I'd be like, yeah, I can't keep doing this. So,
because they're exhausting as well.
Yeah, it feels like you just went through like a workout.
And that's pretty scary. Yeah. I think the scariest part with panic attacks is when they first start happening and you've got no idea what is happening. And then you feel like, oh, there must be something seriously wrong with me.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly right. I remember, my first one, it was like I've never had one before. The thing about that first one, I didn't tell anyone. And I wish I really did. I could have stopped them sooner and stopped the whole thing sooner. But yeah, that feeling of not being able to control your own breath, which is like what keeps us alive. It's a hard feeling. So that's when I knew I've got to do something about this before it gets even worse.
It's important to look after our mental health just like our physical health, and AG1 is the perfect supplement to help take care of both. Just one daily scoop of AG1 covers all your nutritional bases with 75 vitamins, minerals, pre and probiotics, adaptogens, a greens blend, and whole food ingredients. You can count on this tasty mix to boost your energy, increase mental clarity, help you get better sleep, improve digestion, and pep up your immune system. Plus, it's super simple to make part of your morning routine, all for the price of a coffee. You may know producing this podcast is all volunteer, and I have to pay for studio time and editing to keep bringing you these episodes. Every dollar we make from this partnership will go towards helping to cover production costs. So it's an awesome way to support your health and contribute to young men's mental health all in one. If you're looking for a simpler and cost-effective supplement routine, AG1 is giving you a free one-year supply of vitamin D and five free travel packs with your first purchase. Go to drinkag1.com/youngblood. That's drinkag1.com/youngblood. Check it out.
So take us through the process of actually going and telling someone at Headspace about it, and how did that help you?
Yeah, so it was very helpful. So I just looked up online. Like, I knew Headspace was a thing, obviously, like for people under 25, so that youth mental health, which is really good. Reached out online, and back then I don't think they were taking people in person. So did some phone consults, which were good at the time, but I just felt like I needed that connection with someone. So once it all opened up, went back in, went into the Headspace office, which was really helpful. They helped me get through a lot, which is really good. Like, we learned doing some like exercises to help me get through those barriers. And then,
so when you felt panic attacks coming on, they give you some tools, some things to think about to slow your breathing down and be able to pull yourself out of those.
Yeah, exactly moments. Right. And it's more being stuck in your own head with those panic attacks. So learning about that, to learning to control your mind about,
well, knowing what it was for a
start. Yeah, exactly right. And knowing when it was coming, some stuff you can do to prevent them happening, which did work for a little bit, which really good. Then they sort of started, I don't know if I was getting used to them too much or that sort of thing.
What about your fear of death? Something that I definitely would overthink about quite a bit but more so as I got a bit older.
Yeah.
Philosophically, is something that you read or something that you heard that's clicked to make you view that differently?
Yeah, 100%. So what I did eventually, talked about it with Headspace, but I sort of took into my own hands, was a bit of exposure therapy, which did really help for me, which is just learning about it in a way. So it was an idea that we came up with, and I actually like researched it, and I actually remember seeing like one quote, I can't remember who it was by, but that like death is one of the most peaceful experiences we can have. And I sort of not resonate with that, but think about that when I do get scared. I'm like, well, like we don't know what's after death. So it's not like we're here floating around and missing out on things. It's like we're seeing a light, and it can be a peaceful feeling. And in a way, I thought, well, if that's what life leads to, then maybe it is worth, hanging around and enjoying it. So.
Well, you're explaining sort of the fundamental human fear, which is the fact that we don't have control over our own life and death, and that our lives are going to end. And I don't think it's weird to overthink about that at all. I think humans are pretty good at compartmentalizing not thinking about it, because like you've experienced, if you're thinking about it constantly, it makes it pretty hard to go about living your life.
Exactly right.
But we're all looking for answers and meaning, and what's behind that is that fear of death or that relationship with death. And I think especially a time like COVID, that brought up a lot of those feelings. I think a lot of that anger and a lot of that fear was based on people realizing, oh, actually I don't have control. Because I think we get lured into that false sense of security that, we control everything and everything stays at an even level and it's all good. And then something like COVID reminded people, actually, you're just humans and you're fragile and anything can sort of happen at any time. And that can be a really difficult thought for people to be able to deal with, but it is a reality.
Yeah.
So you have to be able to come up with coping mechanisms and that can be reframing the way that you think about things, life and death as well.
I definitely think that's, like, explained it perfectly there. Like, the main thing that people, like, can help people is learning that you can only control what you can control. I think once you break that barrier of, okay, here's things I can't control, let's get them out, let's not worry about them. Once you focus on the things you can control, like, it's personally, it's life-changing. It's helps you experience life in a different way and helps you enjoy it from, like, a day-to-day basis. And I think that's a big thing that, like, even if you don't go through mental health problems, I think is a good thing to do, just learning what you can control. And once you do realize what you can, it just makes life that little bit easier.
Yeah, and I guess it's easier said than done.
Exactly.
But it's something that you can practice and work on and gives you something to focus on, because if something's going wrong, you're feeling like you're in free fall and you're out of control. Part of being overwhelmed just thinking about all of these things happening at once, and it's like, oh, where do I begin? But if you go with control what you can control, then there'll be something in that moment you can control and you can think about that.
Yeah.
And that might have even come into it with the panic attacks.
That's exactly.
Part of finding something to focus on to ground yourself in. Because if you're thinking about all the things you can't control, it becomes pretty overwhelming.
Yeah, exactly. That's perfect. It comes overwhelming and you're thinking about things that you don't need to be thinking about. And in a way, it's taking up space in your mind for things that can be positive and things you can control, and being in the present, which I think is another thing that once you learn to do, which, like, I myself haven't yet, which I can on occasion, but when you do get that feeling of, like, oh, this is where I am right now, nothing else is happening, like, don't worry about the future, the past, it's being where you are right now. It's
when you get to be free for a little bit.
Yeah.
But that's a lifelong practice, and it's about being able to bring yourself back to the breath and the present moment. And you know, in theory, that's going to help. And if we switch on and make the effort, then we can do that. But the Buddha's walking around in the present moment all the time.
Exactly.
That's enlightenment. So that's not something that's easy to achieve.
But
I think even once you understand that the benefit that can deliver, if you can catch yourself drifting into the past or freaking out about the future and just bring yourself back to the present moment, even if it's just for 30 seconds or enough to break out of that headset, then that can be super useful tool.
Yeah.
Because I suppose part of it with anxiety and the panic attacks is when your mind's going that way and it's snowballing and you're thinking about, okay, well, this thing's happening now and that's going to lead to this and that's going to lead to this, and then it becomes this massive thing. You're just, like, cutting yourself off from going down that that path of thinking.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good way of putting it. Yeah, you're cutting yourself off and you're making that thought pattern not available, which is what you want to do. You want to always make those positive and those present moments be that path that you want to take. And like you said, like, it's not easy to do, but it is doable.
And it's something that you can practice.
Yeah, exactly right.
So how long did you work with Headspace for?
So I was with them for about 6 or 8 weeks until I felt like, okay, I'm a little bit back on my feet here. So I'm glad it wasn't as long.
Have you shared it with your family at that point?
Yeah, I let them know at that stage that I was going to see someone about it, and it did sort of open up a few avenues with them and learning what, you know, my father and brother go through sometimes, and the other people do feel like that. And yeah, both my parents actually, and the other people do experience that, and it's not just me. I think that's also really in a selfish way, but knowing other people go through that as well is good, because, you know, I've got other people here to support me and going through it too.
So was that a surprise to you when you realised that people close to you also struggle with stuff?
Yeah, I'm sure. Don't mind me saying this, but I remember, late 2020, early 2021, I got a phone call from my dad one day and he was just crying on the phone. I don't really know what was wrong. And he just had to tell me that he was going through things and he just had to open up to someone. And I'm glad that I was someone he could trust with that. It's hard listening to one of your parents sort of go through that.
Yeah.
So the people that you look up to and the people who raise you, and
they're just human though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like we all are. And yeah, that's another thing, like, I've learned no one's superhuman. Like we all have our own sort of experiences and
I think we're prone to think of our dads as heroes and but the more you get older you realize he's just a man, and if we're lucky, like a really great man and a good dad, but and very much fallible and human. Yeah.
And him doing that made him feel like a hero even more to me than ever, because I know like I've got someone who I can go through that with, and knowing that he is proud enough to open up and get help and seek help and talk about it made me feel a lot more confident in me. And I'm like, if my dad can do it, I can do it too.
How were you able to respond when he gave you that call?
Not good. It was over the phone. I was, 700 kilometers away. So was as much as I could do as I wish I could have. Like, I just wanted to go give him a hug, but I couldn't over the phone. Yeah, it just, there was an initial shock, but then there was that feeling of like, okay, I'm going to be here for him as well. And yeah, just as he was breaking down, I was breaking down as well. And I can't remember how long the phone call was. I don't even think it was that long, but just that little initial feeling of that, and then overcoming it and talking about it a little bit, and then eventually, going to get help. And
have you guys talked about that stuff ever since?
Yeah, I feel like it's made us closer than we ever have before. And him actually wanting to move over here is really good for me. So he wants to move over, and being able to be with him is one of my favorite things in the world. Like, I would take time with both my parents and especially my dad, like, over anything in the world. And he'll always be a hero to me. So
yeah, nice, man. Me too. And your brother's struggled with his mental health as well. How aware were you of that?
So I wasn't aware at the start of it. So he lived back home at the time as well. And I again got a call from my dad one day saying that Kale's gone into hospital. What's happened? And he's just had some really bad mental episodes. It's a shame because he was at that time about 16, 17, and it made me feel like that could have happened to me as well at that age, but it did happen to him. Had some problem with some friends, some partners, couldn't feel like he'd go to school or work or anything like that. And he eventually got that bad that he got admitted to hospital. Got a phone call from my dad and saying he's in the ER and he's freaking out and he can't control what's happening to him. Like his behavior's out of not out of his control.
It's scary.
Like at that young age, and obviously me being the overthinker and the anxiety head, thinking I don't want to lose my brother to this. And it's a scary feeling that someone close to you can be close to.
Do you talk to him at all about those things he was going through before he got to that stage, or you sort of had no idea?
No, so I actually didn't, and that's something I wish I did. Before I got to that stage, I was probably a little bit slack on my behalf, which in being in contact with him when he was back home, I reached out to him before this episode and just making sure that he's okay, and I'm happy to share his story, and he's doing a lot better now, which is really good. Yeah, he's back home, got mates, and feel like he's back on track, which is really good. So
Are you able to help him?
Just reaching out. So even going through a few things, when he does, just making sure he's okay. And he actually moved over here for about a month or two, and that was good to be with him. Being able to always check on him and even just to hang out with him. It was a big thing for me. I've got one of my brothers here, but the rest of my family's back home, and it's hard to know that I can't be with them when something happens like that. And even just to be with him in general.
What's he said to you about him going through that time and how he sort of sees it now?
Yeah, so he sees it a lot better now. Like his life is, from what I know, a lot better now. At the time, he was scared for his own well-being, but he felt like he couldn't go to work, couldn't go to school, couldn't be himself, which is another thing. He's such a bright and outgoing person, but seeing him in his shells, really, I don't know whether it's daunting or just shocking.
But it sounds he was experiencing anxiety too.
Yeah. And the way, the feeling of just hearing him being admitted to hospital because of that. It's like scary things.
Have you guys been able to relate to each other then on that fact?
Yeah.
Have you been able to talk to them about any of the things that you've learned that have helped you?
Yeah. And yeah, I definitely feel like reaching out to him and my dad about things makes our connection a lot stronger. I feel like it does with anyone, sharing a story with people and them resonating with it, or even just understanding it in general is a big thing. And I feel like it does grow that connection, so a little bit deeper with other people, which I think is one of the most important things in life, is the connections we have with other people, like just other humans. Like it's so important, and being able to share your story with other people and your family, friends, it could be anyone, being able to relate to them in a way is really good.
For sure. And you guys have made a pretty big jump as a family then, or especially you, dad and your brother.
Yeah.
What was stopping you guys from doing that earlier, do you think?
I'd say just the fear of talking about it, like not wanting to open up. And
have you all said that you were scared of talking about it to each other before? Or?
I don't even think we have to each other, but I know like I myself have, and I wouldn't hesitate to say they felt the same way. It's just that, yeah, getting past that line of opening up to each other, especially family, like we want to be there for each other and be strong, but there is points where we can't do that because we're going through our own battles as well.
But then if you do find a way where you can do that, it can bring you so much closer and much more able to be there for each other.
And you can grow with each other. You can keep each other accountable, and being open to share your story with each other. And even now going forward, when we are open enough to talk about it with each other, when we get the opportunity, it just helps us get better in general.
So I think one of the scariest things is when you've got no idea, or you have an idea that something's wrong, but you can't communicate with that family member or that person that's close to you, and you wish you could, and then the not understanding what's happening and not therefore knowing how to help. I think most people would agree that that can be the hardest part of all of this. Exactly. So if you can find a way where you guys can break through that together, you're so much better equipped to look after yourself and look after each other because you're actually going to talk about whatever that thing is.
Yeah.
Because you can be a supportive family, but if you can't get to the point where you can talk about that really hard stuff, then you can all love each other and be in the same space without really being able to connect on that level.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's hard when you have that distance between you, but you have to do what you can to the best of your ability to try and keep that.
And you've got to make that jump to like open up and say, well, actually it's all like your dad did calling.
Yeah, exactly right.
And that would have been really hard for him to call you that day.
Yeah.
And very hard for you to hear it and respond. And then very hard for you to hear about your brother, and hard for you to talk about it with your brother. But having all of that happen, and now you have the relationship that you have. You know?
It's in a way a blessing that everything did happen, and now that we're all somewhat growing together, I think that's a really big thing in our family, and we're all very close, which I'm like forever grateful for. And now we've been through that, we're all going through our own battles, it's good to be able to be there for each other and grow like as a family. And it's
and have you been able to extend that outside of your family to your friend group as well, where you're being that kind of person who's able to have those discussions and look out for people?
Yeah, I feel like I am a little bit. I do somewhat struggle a little bit still reaching out to my mates. My partner at the moment is fantastic with that though. They're always the person I go to at the moment, and very open to talk with her, and it's really good to have that person now. I felt like for a very long time I didn't have that one person where I could go to no matter what. She definitely is that for me now, which is fantastic. And opening up to mates is something I've learned to do a lot better. Got those handful that you're always there for and always willing to listen to as well, which is important. Like, it's important for me to reach out, but it's also important to listen to what other people have. And that's what I want to be for people, is a thought vacuum in a way. Listen to what they have to say.
So. Yeah. And have your mates been receptive to that? Have you had times where they do talk to you about this and that?
Yeah. I have certain mates and a few in particular that are just always checking on me no matter what. And some don't even know the full like thing of what I've been through, but they still know that I've had some problems, and could even be they'd even notice I'm down for one day, and they'll be checking in on me like, hey, what's going on, everything okay? And it's so important to have that.
Do they talk to you in reverse about themselves?
In a way, yeah. Especially when I ask them about it as well. It's good to have that two-way connection, I feel like, with people. It is good to open up to people, but if it's only you going the one way, you feel, like I said, like before, that burden. And if you do feel like you're sharing each other's stories, it feels a lot more easy to reach out to them, and it feels like more comfortable and being able to grow together.
Because you create that culture.
Exactly right.
Yeah. And it doesn't even take up a huge amount of the relationship. I think
No, it doesn't.
Often end up talking about is we're not saying to blokes that you have to become, you know, emotional all the time and you've got to talk about your feelings every time you see someone.
Yeah.
But it's just having that capacity to be able to do it.
Yeah.
If you feel like someone's a bit off or whatever, being able to check in with them, or if someone comes to you, being able to be serious in that moment and have that chat. But you can still be 90% of the time just, you know, having a laugh or whatever it is.
Exactly right. And currently, like, I work at a group fitness gym, so I see, close to nearly, like, 100 people a day if I'm there all day. And you get to know everyone's behaviours, and you can tell when they are that little bit off. And like you said, you can only take a 2 or 3 minute conversation to say, hey, is everything going okay? And them to, oh, I've just had a bad day. Like, this has happened. And just being able to be there for them, even if it is for that 2 or 3 minutes, it can save a lot more angst and a lot more bottling up, and just that quick conversation, like, are you okay? How are you? It's three simple words, but it's like powerful three words that can spark something in someone and start that conversation, which is the most important thing. So,
and how have you seen that people making a physical transformation allow them to make a transformation with their mental health as well?
It's big. So that's one of the things, like, I'm very big on is exercising for my mental health. I do it obviously to get stronger and fitter, but for me personally, it's just a release. Like, it's a way to build up everything I've got, and especially working in a group fitness gym, so we have multiple people come through in a group, and a lot of them are there just for that community feel, being able to do it with other people and express how they're feeling with other people. And very blessed I get the opportunity, and then I'm able to be that person for a few people, like even just a handful of people. It feels good to know that they can come to me and they're okay to chat with me about things, and being able to work on their physical fitness is good, but it correlates so big with mental health, and being able just to move your body is a good way to do it.
What made you want to be a mental health ambassador with the Shaka Project?
Yeah, so like with Shaka, I saw they're looking for ambassadors. Two main things were being able to like represent a brand like that. So Sean and Courtney do great things at Shaka, and based out of Ballarat as well. It's close to home, and what they do is amazing. And even if I'm just a little part of that here in Adelaide, just with ambassador meetups and hopefully learning their way of doing things, and one day getting able to be a spokesperson for them will be really great. And two, just, again, the things I've gone through and going through, and being able to know that I can help create change in any way possible is, it's too good of an opportunity to pass up. So,
what's the key for you staying on top of your anxiety now?
So a few things is journaling every day, writing down my thoughts. So even if I don't say them out loud, at least I'm writing them down, what I'm grateful for, and that, and meditation, breathing work, I still practice daily. Again, it can just be like a conversation, it can be 2 or 3 minutes, just even, not even that, just 5 deep breaths and just, working through different exercises to know that, like, I am here in the present. That's the main thing I try and do it for, is knowing that right here, this is all that matters. And if I can try and do that for 2 or 3 minutes daily, that's what I've got to keep trying to do. And even for my own mental health, just talking to other people about it is the most important thing. Not letting it bottle up and letting it out to someone who you're safe to talk to about it, make sure I'm always doing that.
Yeah, we're obviously a great example of what can happen if you are brave enough and you do feel like you're able to talk about what's actually going on, and you can just see the flow and effect that's had, fortunately, in your own life, with your family in particular, and your friendship group and your partner and everything, and now you're a mental health ambassador.
Yeah, exactly.
And even have it at your work as well. So you wouldn't have imagined that 3 years ago that all of that would be happening.
Yeah, it's an amazing feeling.
But you took action in yourself to be able to make that happen, especially when you were really spiraling, having those panic attacks and needed something to give, and then you had showed the initiative to go out and get that ball rolling. So I think that's really important for people to hear and know that it does fall back on us to take that first step, as scary as that can be.
Yeah.
But the results are worth it.
Yeah, very blessed to have the community around me that I do, and my mates around me. And like even this year, I ran a fundraiser for the push-up challenge for this year in June. Very fortunate to be able to raise a few $1,000 for that, and actually shaved my head for charity. Even that was just...
Because you had the kells before.
Yeah, right? I had the big fro before, grew that out, and it was getting way too messy, man. It was getting way too messy, so I'm like, hey, let's get rid of it.
It was a community service to get rid of that.
Yeah, oh, mate, 100%. It was a blessing for everyone else. Sight for sore eyes. But yeah, no, it was a good opportunity, and being able to do those sort of things just being, making yourself like comfortable in the uncomfortable and doing new things and reaching out to people. And again, I just keep bringing back to like breaking that barrier. As soon as you get through that, there's so much in life that you can explore. And I feel like that's, it's the main point.
Amen, brother.
Amen.
Thanks for sharing your story.
Mate, no worries. Thank you. Thank you.
That's it for this episode. If you like what we're all about, support us by following Youngblood Men's Mental Health on Instagram and Youngblood Mental Health on TikTok. Every podcast episode is recorded in professional quality video, and they're all up on our Youngblood Men's Mental Health YouTube channel. So please show some love and subscribe. A big thanks to our local business supporters, Pro Realty Property Consultants and Herd Financial. You can find everything there is to know about the podcast at youngbloodmensmentalhealth.com. And most importantly, please share these stories with anyone in your life who needs to know they're not alone. We're all in this together. Catch you next time.